While you slept, the government stopped.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money Podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm Mark Garrison in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Here and abroad, market reaction to the government shutdown that started overnight was mostly muted. But later this month, the country will hit the debt ceiling. Failure by Congress to raise it would get a much stronger reaction, likely, than we're seeing this morning. Julie Nieman of Smith Moore & Company joins us to talk about this. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Mark.
So how much of an impact can a shutdown have on the economy if it lasts a while?
Everything that's depending upon scheduled loans coming through will be hit. And you're looking at FHA loans, small business loans, farm loans, they stop. Consumer confidence has already been pretty shaky anyway. Consumer spending is really going to fall off the cliff. And you can also say goodbye to the housing and financial stocks that have been the market leaders. Those also depend upon debt as well. That'll be a huge problem. Bottom line is, St. Louis's based macroeconomic advisor says that for every 2 weeks the government is shut down, it will cost the economy 0.3% in growth. This is not a trivial number when you look at an economy that's growing at a very, very slow rate.
Okay, so that is the shutdown. But beyond that, we have the debate over raising the debt ceiling, which could have much more economic impact than the shutdown. What are the markets watching for in terms of raising the debt ceiling?
And that's the really big dance, because if we default by October 17th, the last time this happened, the markets went into a tailspin, taking down about 13%. So the markets basically are behaving as this is so stupid it couldn't possibly happen. We're definitely in a situation here, though, it could possibly happen. The government has about $30 billion a day and can pay out, but it's $60 billion a day they need to pay out. So the government's going to face significantly higher borrowing costs. You're going to see U.S. investor confidence drop again. The long-term impact of higher credit ratings, especially when you're in an environment where interest rates are going to be rising, is going to really put a huge burden on the American public. Confidence is everything.
Okay, Julie Nieman of Smith Moore & Company, thanks so much.
You bet.
It turns out a government shutdown is a great time for politicians to raise money. Marketplace's David Gura reports from Washington on how there is no shutting down D.C.'s endless chase for cash.
As the government staggered to a shutdown, both political parties were sending out emails asking for donations. Sheila Krumholtz is the executive director of the Center for Responsive Politics.
Political crises beget political fundraising. Anytime there's a partisan stalemate or quagmire, politicians and their operatives are going to try to capitalize on that frustration.
They know that their base is watching or listening or tweeting, that they're following what's happening closely, and that they're probably passionate about it. Ross Baker teaches political science at Rutgers.
It's a reflection on the kind of curious and complex notion of generosity.
Especially, Sheila Krumholtz says, when those pleas for donations are pegged to a shutdown.
It's ironic that the money may start flowing to politicians and parties once it stops flowing to government workers. It's this kind of shift of money from one side to the other.
A shift that can happen quickly thanks to the internet. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
The Obamacare health exchanges are now open for business. Today is the first day people can sign up for insurance online under the new health care law. Many of them were clearly up early to do just that, as web traffic is reportedly very high. Web users in many states have gotten error messages, and there are long waits on the telephone helpline. Maryland delayed signups on its own exchange until noon.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Japan is hiking its national sales tax from 5% all the way to 8%. The BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes joins us from Tokyo to explain why and what it all means. Hello, Rupert.
Hello, Mark.
So explain the thinking behind this sales tax increase.
Well, the real driving force behind this is the aging of Japan's population, and Japan's population is aging very rapidly. We're already near to 25% of the population over 65. By the middle of the century, that will be closer to 40% of the population. But Japan's public finances are in a disastrous state. Taxes currently only cover about half government spending every year. Japan has the biggest public debt in the developed world, more than 220% of gross debt. domestic product. So something has got to be done to try and get Japan's public finances back in order.
Now, this is also going to raise the price that consumers pay when they shop. What about the concern that this will be a drag on consumer spending and hurt the economy?
That is the huge downside of this, and the huge risk of this decision is that Japan's younger shoppers will simply stop buying, and they'll particularly stop buying big ticket items like automobiles, houses, things like that. In fact, what we might see is people racing to do those purchases now, so we'll get a short-term boom, and then after April, we'll suddenly see a dramatic drop-off in spending. And that's also coming together with Japan is seeing inflation for the first time in many, many years, because the yen is now so weak. So, you know, Japan's consumers could be hit from both sides.
Okay, the BBC's Rupert Wingfield Hayes reporting on a big policy shift in Japan. Thanks so much, Rupert.
Thank you.
And finally, economy wonks like us worry the government shutdown will delay the market-moving jobs report due Friday. Animal lovers and, of course, BuzzFeed staffers are crushed that the National Zoo's panda cam is dark. But that is small stuff, really, compared to, say, being annihilated by an asteroid. NASA's Near-Earth Object Office, also known as Asteroid Watch, really freaked out its million followers when it said there will be no tweets during the shutdown. An hour later, responding to fears of certain doom, the office clarified that there are still astronomers watching the skies for deadly asteroids and comets. Just don't expect them to tweet about it. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison with the Marketplace Midday Update. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.